A literary poem. It's called The Oxford Hysteria of English Poetry. Back in the caveman days, business was fair. You used to turn up at Wookiee Hole. Plenty of action down the hole nights when it wasn't raided. They'd see my bare gut harp and the mess at the back of my eyes and they'd say, "You're a poet?" I'd say, "What's for dinner?" "Mastodon." "I'm a poet." If they said pterodactyl or poet, I'd move on down to cheddar. "Right," they'd say, "make poetry." So I'd slam away at the three basic chords and go into the act. A story about saber-toothed tigers with a comic hero, a sexy one with nanty wife clubbing twist. Good progressive stuff mainly, get ready for the Bronze Age, all that. And soon it would be, "Bring out the woad." Yeah, woad. We used to get high on woad. Right, the Vikings only wanted sagas full of gigantic deadheads cutting off each other's vitals. The Romans weren't much better. Under that armor, you could tell they were soft with their central heating and poets with names like Horace. But I was nearly busted for singing some anti-Caesar verses to the theater queue at St. Albans, and busting meant crucifixion. You'd think things would improve under the Anglo-Saxons, but you've never played a mead hall. All they wanted was the latest dirt on St. Augustine, or Beowulf versus the bog people. Under the Normans, the language became a pleasure to write in. Yeah, write in. By now, everyone was starting to write down poems. Well, it saved memorizing and improvising, and the peasants couldn't get hold of it. Soon there were hundreds of us, most of us writing under the name of Geoffrey Chaucer. Well, you don't think he wrote all those tales. No, Jeff just did the connecting bits. Then suddenly, we were knee-deep in sonnets. Holinshed ran a headline, "Bonanza for Bards." It got fantastic. Looning around from the bear pit to the globe, all those freakouts down the mermaid. Kit Marlowe coming on like Richard II, a virgin queen in a ginger wig. And English poetry in full, what's it, bloody fantastic. But I never found any time to do any writing till Willie finally flipped, smoking too much of the special stuff Sir Walter Raleigh was pushing. Cromwell's time I spent on cultural committees. Then Charles II swung down from the trees, and it was sexual medley time. And the only verses they wanted were epigrams on Chloe's breasts, but I only got published on the back of her left kneecap. Next came Pope and Dryden, so I went underground. Don't mess with the mafia. Then suddenly, woomph, it was the Romantic Revival. And it didn't matter how you wrote. All the public wanted was a hairy grey image. Before they'd even print you, you had to smoke opium, die of consumption, fall in love with your sister, or drown in the Mediterranean, not at Brighton. My publisher said, "I'll have to remainder you unless you go and live in a lake or something like this bloke Wordsworth." After that, there were about 1,000 years of Tennyson, who got so bored with himself that he changed his name to Kipling at half time. Strange that Tennyson should be remembered for his poems, really. We always thought of him as a golfer. There hasn't been much time for poetry since the 20s, what with leaving the Communist Church to join the Catholic Party and explaining why in the CIA monthly. Finally, I was given the chair of comparative ambiguity at Armpit University, Java. It didn't keep me busy, but it kept me quiet. It seemed like poetry had been safely tucked up for the night. Yeah.